Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Martin Fletcher has been called the gold standard of TV war correspondence and is rapidly building a new reputation as an author. He's won almost every award in television journalism, including 5 Emmys. His latest novel is Jacob's Oath. As World War II winds to a close, Europe's roads are clogged with 20 million exhausted refugees walking home. Among them are Jacob and Sarah, lonely Holocaust survivors who meet in Heidelberg. But Jacob is consumed with hatred and cannot rest until he has killed his brother's murderer, a concentration camp guard nicknamed the Rat. Now he must choose between revenge and love, between avenging the past and building a future. It's a great pleasure to welcome Martin Fletcher back to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
All right, my pleasure, Joe. Thank you.
What got you to this subject?
Well, my previous book was set in London, 1945, and that period immediately after World War II has always fascinated me, you know, because so much of the literature of fiction is about the build-up to the Second World War, the war itself, and then later on into the 50s. But there's very little about what was it like for the people who survived the war, in particular the Holocaust survivors in this case? You know, how do they get on with the rest of their lives? What do they do the day after? That was what interested me.
When you are looking at a story, and obviously, as I mentioned in the introduction, you have such an incredible background as a journalist, as a television correspondent, how much of what you write comes from your knowledge and your interest in history and what you have covered?
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting because when I write fiction, I really do feel that sometimes that I was there. You know, I mean, and I have, as you said, I have covered, you know, wars and disasters all around the world for decades. And so when I write about, for instance, the refugees who were walking through Germany at the end of World War II, you know, the number of 20 million is what people use. It's an incredible thought, the idea of all these tens of thousands of people straggling along the road, pushing their little carts, carrying a few possessions. And so, you know, where most writers, I guess, make it up. I mean, I've seen that in Rwanda, in Africa, in Sudan, Ethiopia. I've seen and I've walked with columns of refugees in those situations. So my work as a journalist really did help me put myself in the place and the time, and also because of my family story, which is their families were mostly wiped out in the Holocaust. My parents lived. That's also real for me, you know. So it's all I'm writing a fiction, but it's all very real to me.
And I assume when you start off with a story like this, that there are some questions that you want to work out and answer in your mind.
Yeah, and the main one I think in all my work, and that also comes from my work as a journalist, is, as I mentioned earlier, what do you do with the rest of your life after a terrible tragedy? You know, I've spent so much of my life meeting people on the worst day of their life, after a suicide bomber killed their children, or a soldier shot somebody, and then, or people dying of starvation, then the father is burying his daughter. You know, so I've spoken with these people, and the question of what was it like to be that person? How do you survive? How do you go on? Really has always preoccupied me. And even in my work as a journalist, I was always looking for those stories that dealt with the individual. You know, I was always covering major events, the fall of the Berlin Wall, the Tiananmen Massacre, et cetera, et cetera. And at a certain point, I realized, although I was the tradition of the classic witness to history, it wasn't really about the events. For me, it was more about the people. And at a certain point when I understood it's about the people, not just the event, that's when I think I became a different kind of a journalist. And that's what I'm able to milk in a way, and to put it not in a nice way, in my writing today. I feel that I know what it was like to be those people. And I really want to express what I believe it was like for them in those difficult times. And a lot of people who read the book say it seems so real, and I'm pleased by that.
In talking about those people, specifically in this novel, it is Jacob and Sarah. Tell us a little bit about these two individuals who fall in love.
Well, f- first of all, they're totally fictional characters, but I did a lot of research, and it's all based on, you know, on reality. So one of them, Jacob, survived Bergen-Belsen concentration camp. He survived when most people died because he was in a special part of the concentration camp called the Star Camp, where they kept certain Jews to trade them for German prisoners of war, so they were treated a little bit better, although 70% died. So Jacob walks home to Heidelberg, pushed by this oath he swore to his dying brother, Maxi, that he would take revenge on the guy who killed him, who also comes from Heidelberg. And then Sarah is also a Jewish refugee who survived in Survivor, who lived in Berlin. The 5,000 Jews went underground in Berlin who were not taken to the camps. They were hiding in the subway, in the cemeteries, in the forest. And of the 5,000, 1,500 survived, and Sarah was one of them. And she survived only then to be liberated by the Russian army when they took over Berlin. And the Russians, you know, they raped 200,000 women in 3 weeks in Berlin after they occupied the city throughout the Nazis, and she was one of them. So they both make their way home, lonely, miserable, for their own reasons. And then they meet, the only two Jews in Heidelberg. They meet, fall in love. And that's when Jacob's dilemma is posed. He swore an oath to take revenge, but he knows that if he kills the guard, he'll lose his chance for future. He'll lose his love, Sarah. So he's posed, what do I do? You know, is it, what's more important, the past or the future, love or hate? And that's what I wanted to get into in my book.
And it has such a thriller quality to it. There's very much a page-turner quality to the novel.
Yeah, well, you know, thank you. I'm glad to hear that. I mean, I wanted it to be a romantic thriller in a way. I mean, the story is a love story, but it's also a thriller. And I'm glad you say that because I wanted to really grow the drama of that confrontation between love and hate. And there's also the added ingredient, which was that after World War II, there was a group of Jewish soldiers in the Jewish Brigade of the British Army who were Jews from Palestine who fought with the British. And they went off the reservation, so to speak, and they formed an underground secret unit that assassinated SS officers in Germany after World War II. And so I weave their story in with the story of Jacob and Sarah.
You also, in both Jacob and Sarah, returning to the houses that their families lived in before the war, are exploring that idea of returning home.
The hardest thing for a refugee, and I believe this is true because of my own family history, and is that when people survived, and not only that, by the way, also from my work as a journalist, again, in all these terrible places, I know that when people survive any terrible thing, the first thing they want to do is go home. Anybody's instinct is to go home, see who else survived, find the family, you know, go to the home. But the problem for refugees worldwide, it's universal, is that when you survive that kind of a tragedy, any kind of a real tragedy, there isn't a home to go to. You're a different person. You're not the same person. So physically, each one, Jacob and Sarah, go home. They reach their houses. But in both cases, somebody else is living in them. Everybody else is dead. And so what do you do? And that was very real for refugees after the Second World War. Many people went home to find those homes were occupied by other people. So there's a physical sense of home doesn't exist, but really it's the internal journey that I was more interested in, that the people have changed, they can never be the same, and now they have to invent a new life for themselves. And the question is, will they do it together through love, or will it be done disastrously through hate? And by the way, that's something I've come across many times. I remember I was in Rwanda once, mm-hmm. after the massacres there. I remember 800,000 Tutsis were killed by Hutus in 3 months, and I was with a group of Tutsis, about 100 people, and I threw the translator. I asked them, "What do you want? What do you want to do now? Revenge, or you want to go home? What do you want?" And nobody, not one of them, put their hand up and said revenge. They all just wanted a peaceful future.
You spoke of research a moment ago, and I wanted to explore that with you just for a moment, because when the book starts out and opens in the human laundry in Bergen-Belsen. How much did you know about that place? What did you know to be able to tell us about it in such detail?
Well, that's a great... Thank you for asking that question, because I knew nothing about the human laundry. I came across that term as I was doing my research. I speak German. I read the local newspapers from that period when I went to Germany on my research trip, and I came across the human laundry, and I hadn't seen it mentioned anywhere else. Now, the amazing thing about the internet was I found 13 pictures, photos, in the archives of the Imperial War Museum in London. And if you actually Google Bergen-Belsen Human Laundry 1945, the pictures come up. So although I'd never heard of it, and it's a really esoteric question, you know, what was it like in that room in 1945, a question we'd asked 20 years ago, we'd have no answer. Today, through the internet, I found it within a moment. And so the first page of the book, which describes the human laundry, which was a stable, a horse stable, that was converted into a place where the British doctors and German nurses were washing the Holocaust survivors, cleaning them of lice and everything because they were fighting typhus and typhoid. That description I give on the first page of the book is taken straight from the photographs of the actual place at the actual time. So what a great resource.
You have written both fiction and nonfiction recently. Do you know where your writing will take you next?
Well, I want to write fiction. I always thought, it's, you know, after a year of career in journalism where it's so hard, you're always phoning and having to find the facts, I thought, oh, fiction's easy. You just get to make it up. But I realized actually the research in fiction is just as arduous. So I prefer, I want to write fiction, but I want the fiction to be based on reality. And really, I see my fiction as an extension of my journalism. You know, in journalism, you always ask those questions, where, what, when, why, how. But what you don't really get at is, what was it like to be that person? And I think fiction is a better tool to say that. So I wanted to study periods in history and then write them in fiction in order to get at the heart of the people. That's my, you know, that's my ambition.
Of course, you were Tel Aviv bureau chief for NBC News for so long. Are there aspects when there is news breaking from that part of the world, as there so often is, that you miss it?
No. In a word, no. I mean, I was doing it for so long, and I'm still very interested. And actually, the first thing I do every day, for about the first 45 minutes of every day now, is read the news from Israel. So I'm still very involved in it, and I keep up to date in it. And of course, I lived there for a long time. But no, you know what? I don't miss it. And when people ask me, do you miss the excitement of the wars and whatnot? Guess what? No, I don't.
No. Well, I wouldn't think so. Yeah. The name of the novel is Jacob's Oath. It is published by Thomas Dunn Books from St. Martin's Press. Martin Fleischer, it's always a great pleasure to speak with you. I thank you very much for sharing with us.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you.
Great pleasure. Thank you. Again, the title of the book is Jacob's Oath. It is published by Thomas Dunn Books from St. Martin's Press. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.